presented by the Common Sense Institute. Welcome to Common Sense Digest, the podcast that seeks to inject a little common sense into Colorado's policy discussion. Here's your host, Earl Wright.
Welcome to the Common Sense Digest podcast. My name is Earl Wright, and I am the chairman of the board of Common Sense Institute and your host for today. Alongside housing costs, crime has been one of the biggest and most defining issues in Colorado in the 2020s, especially when it comes to how our state's youth are involved. Paul Pazin is here to talk with me about how youth crime impacts Colorado overall, but especially how much it costs our economy. And it still stuns me. This is what it's costing each one of us, and also the aggregate amount. Mr. Pazin was the chief of Denver Police Department until 2022. He was a true innovator in that role, spearheading the new diversion programs, mental health and domestic violence task forces, new use of force policies, and new training curricula. He's now serving as CSI's public safety fellow. Paul, thanks for being with us today.
Earl, it's always great to be here. Great to talk to you and to have an opportunity to share some information with our listeners.
Well, you always come up with information that grabs our attention, and I must say thank you for all you've done for the city and state, and thank you for being a fellow. But let's get started. Are our kids more prone to get in trouble in crime and delinquencies than other places, or is the percent of population of youth that are kind of get themselves in trouble here similar to the rest of the country?
Kids here just the same as kids across the country. And, very few variation. You know, we're not going to say that our kids are different than others. However, what we have seen and what matches with the total crime is, you know, kind of this step back from accountability, this step back in, wanting to hold individuals accountable for their own criminal behavior. We've kind of lumped folks together and, gone down this path where we're trying to take a more public health approach and not utilize both levers of the public safety aspect in order to hold people accountable for their crimes. But we are seeing very similar correlations between total crime in Colorado and the juveniles' crime rate here in Colorado as well.
Okay, shoot, I hate to hear that. The report goes into deep detail about the kinds of crimes the juveniles are committing. Is it just, petty stuff, or are we talking about some things that, hey, wait a minute, we can't have this go on?
And again, very similar to the total crime, we have some young people that unfortunately are involved in the highest levels of crime in our state. We're talking the murders, the violent assaults. Unfortunately, our young people have graduated to some of these higher level crimes. Also interesting, and I don't mean to jump subjects here, but the highest concentration, it's also important to figure out where these are taking place. And as far as the crime count, or where these crimes are occurring in specific counties, what share the juveniles make up of the crime in that particular area? It's highest in Adams County, so northern Aurora, just to the east of Denver, followed by Fremont County, Jefferson County, Mesa, and Boulder. So it's just as important to see what percentage of crimes are being committed by our youthful offenders, as well as where these crimes are occurring. So that way, these particular counties can work to address those types of issues.
A guy named Robert Sapowski, I believe is how I pronounce his last name, said that wherever you have a wide divergence of economic well-being, in other words, people that are really well off economically and then a significant number of people who are not, the crime rates tend to go up. But Adams County doesn't appear to be, to me, someone with a wide divergence of economic viability within the community. And Boulder does, though, which kind of fits that pattern. Are these crimes where they're going against their friends and buddies, or maybe somebody maybe is a little bit different than them, not necessarily against higher income areas of the community?
You know, the socioeconomic status, you know, often, I mean, almost to that question that you had a little bit earlier, are kids different than kids in other places? And I think you correctly pointed out that the economics in Adams County are drastically different than that in Boulder County. And, you know, the median household income in those two areas is very different. Yet these are two of the five highest increases or highest rates of juvenile crime in our state. The subject or, you know, comes down to that individual behavior and then what we do about that individual behavior. And I think this points out that it doesn't matter if you're from a county that has a lower socioeconomic status or one that has some of the highest costs or highest incomes in the state of Colorado. This is an issue, and it's an issue that we need to study more and then really dive in and do something about.
Well, appreciate the report, because the report is really giving us some insights I think all of us want to know more about. But is the situation of certain types of crimes getting worse, particularly the ones where you talked about homicide, scary to all of us, and personal, you know, somehow attacking individuals, be it rape or whatever else, are they getting worse or are they hopefully subsiding?
You know, what we're seeing with the report is, again, it matches very similar to the challenges that we're facing in Colorado. And what we can say is Colorado has gone from a very safe state, one of the safer states in the entire country, a state that was at or below the national average for many, many years. And now we exceed the national crime rate in far too many categories, both violent crime categories and property crime categories. And what the report is finding is also, as you know, a small subset. So we saw a relatively historic flat percentage of some of the older juveniles, the 16, 17 year old juveniles that had remained relatively steady. And lately, in the last couple of years, as far as crimes committed by individuals in this age group, that is starting to increase. We also saw an increase and leveling off of the young people that are just below that crime rate, the 14, 15 year olds. They're also responsible for a large number of the crimes that are taking place, the juvenile crimes that are taking place in our state. When we talk about those major crimes, those crimes against persons, those crimes that devastate a family, like murder or shootings and aggravated assaults and robberies, unfortunately our young people have too great of a share of that type of crime category, and we have to do something to address it.
I want to ask one more question, then we've got to move on because there's other things in the report. I guess the thing that's disturbing me a little bit, what I hear from your chief, is that I don't hear us saying that the crimes that the youth are doing is because they've got to get bread on the table and mom and dad can't bring enough food home, or they've got to somehow, you know, take care of their little brother or sister, and this is the only choice they have, or one of the choices, and they choose a choice of crime to take care of the little brothers. I don't hear that being something you're saying about the juvenile crime issue.
Absolutely correct in your assessment there, Earl. And the types of crime, you know, putting food on the table doesn't require a person to go out and murder somebody. Putting food on the table is not based on violent crime. Often we would see something along the lines of property crime. So the report also finds that property crime, right? If you're saying that you're committing a survival type crime, a crime of survival that you need to get groceries for yourself or the family or something along those lines, those typically fall in the property crimes area. And we see a decrease in juveniles related to property crimes, but we see this increase in violent crimes, crimes against persons, violent crimes, you know, going up between 7% and 16%, murders going up significantly, the aggravated assaults, nearly 20% increases there. So your assessment is correct. These are not crimes born out of survival or trying to put food on the table. Violent crimes are much different, and we're seeing increases in that particular category of violent crimes being associated with our youthful offenders.
I must admit, it's a bit disheartening, but what does it cost the state of Colorado? Previous reports that we've done on crime, I was astounded at the total cost of crime as well as to the individual. The cost to the individual who's safe behind their guarded gate, that's a little bit of hyperbole, but you know, safe and not don't see themselves being impacted. But we all are being impacted by it, even though it doesn't seem to hit us where we have to pay something that day. Tell us, what are we talking about in the cost of juvenile crime?
So the most recent year of a full set of data is 2022. The final 2023 numbers still takes a little bit into 2024 to pull out. So the 2022, cost of all juvenile crime in Colorado is $3.31 billion with a B dollars here. And that is the totality of the juvenile crime itself, but not the economic impact. The economic impact of that $3.3 billion cost of crime is even greater than that. So that's a lot of money, and that's a lot of money that could be used otherwise if we could get our arms around juvenile crime, get it, you know, back to where we were in 2008 would be a nice goal for us. Get it back to where it was in the early 2010s. Would really help us to address this. So the economic cost, $3.31 billion, is great, but there's also that personal cost that's impossible to measure. When, you know, a young person or is the victim of a crime perpetrated by a youthful offender, or a family is devastated by the actions of this particular crime. But the total economic cost of crime is that $3.31 billion.
Well, that's just a little bit less than 10% of our state budget, which that's a gigantic amount of money for a state like Colorado of our size. You know, what's all included in those costs? And do certain crimes cost more to us societally than others?
Yes, you're exactly right in that. And let me answer the first part of it. Sometimes when you're measuring the cost of crimes, there's a formula out there. And this is something that has been studied both on the crime side of things as well as the public health side of things. There's a National Institute of Health report that highlights the costs of crimes. And there's that tangible cost of the 911 call, the police officers that respond to the scene, the investigators and their time handling the case. Then as that case progresses and moves through the process, there's the prosecution costs, there's the court costs. If somebody is held accountable, there is the cost of incarceration. On the victim side of things, if somebody is injured or harmed as a result of that, then there's the ambulance response and the costs associated with the ambulance. There's costs associated with the hospitals and the care provided to somebody that was physically harmed from this. And so those are some of the tangible costs that are associated with the crime. And, you know, hearing some of those types of activities, courts, incarceration, hospitals, treatment, those are typically fairly expensive when we're thinking of things. And so when you associate costs of crime, the higher the level of the crime itself, something like a murder, that is something that all of those tangible costs go up. There's more time, more police response, more investigations. The prosecution has a lot of resources put into that. The courts and the length of a trial on the back end with incarceration or parole, probation, things of that nature. There's a lot of costs associated there. And then there's the intangible costs that are associated, right? If it's a high profile crime that takes place in a tourist area, for example, that can have a dramatic impact on the future economic vitality of that particular area. People are afraid to go to a particular location if they're hearing, oh my goodness, this shooting, this murder, this sex assault occurred in this particular area. And so there's an intangible economic cost associated with the fear of crime. And that is something that we have to be aware of. We have to take a look at in order to, first and foremost, keep our community safe, but the economic vibrancy of communities, of our state, it is critical. I mean, we don't want to lose residents to you know, people that don't feel safe here and move out of state to raise their family. We don't want to lose businesses because they can't keep their employees safe. And juvenile crime, especially this increase in violent crime associated with juveniles, is something that has to get addressed in order for us to really have a place where we can live, work, and play and maintain high quality of life for the people of Colorado.
Well, you had mentioned earlier that there, in the last few years, there has been a trend that's favorable with regards to the violence, with regards to juveniles. Can you describe the trend? And where are we having less juvenile criminal activity? Do you want to speculate why that's happening?
Actually, I'm really glad that you asked this question, just so we can get a little bit more specific in it. We're seeing a slight decrease in the property crimes by young people, youthful offender. We're seeing an increase in the violent crimes in Colorado. And again, this is all in this larger window of total crime in Colorado. And as we've indicated, total crime in Colorado, going from a relatively safe state to a state that has higher crime rates than many, the example of auto theft, than all of the states in the country, it's really important to examine those two areas. And, you know, speculating on this, there would require a lot more research and data, but it appears that it matches some of the same trends that we are seeing with the accountability of offenders who are adults, who are above the age of 18.
Wait. You mentioned a word I haven't heard you use before. That's accountability.
Yes.
So there's maybe in the near term, there's some things that are happening that the word accountability might be reflective of that would help this trend you're talking about.
You're spot on, Earl. You know, based on my experience, based on what I would see, oftentimes young people, they push boundaries. And if they are not held accountable for those low-level crimes, unfortunately, I saw this far too often as my time as the police chief, is that they would graduate to higher-level crimes to include crimes against persons, these violent crimes with weapons, pointing guns at people, pulling triggers, devastating families. And when we see this decrease in property crimes, it appears that there's less accountability for the property crimes that young people may be involved in. And that has a correlation to this increase in the violent crimes, including dramatic increases in ag assaults, which are, you know, physical harm to somebody and murders committed by young people. So again, more study is necessary here, but this is something that I witnessed firsthand during my time in the police department, this dwindling lack of accountability on the lower level crimes. But it appears that not holding young people accountable for these property crimes that are going down for this particular category, the increase that we're seeing in violent crimes, that folks are not being held accountable until really it's too late, until they've devastated a family or created great harm to our community. And it would be a lot better if we take a more balanced approach and prevent those higher level crimes that we're seeing youthful offenders participate in.
Chief, it just appears from my perspective that public policy folks should be trying to talk to folks with 3 and 4 decades of experience like you have. I don't know how you gather all the data you have over 3 or 4 decades, but the experience is worth something here. For us to say we have to have more data, well, maybe if we can't get the data right away, maybe we talk to folks like yourself with all the experience, what's been successful, not been successful. That leads to my next question, of course. What are the next steps, in your opinion, that leaders can take to keep bolstering the trend of declining youth crime that you've been so generous in talking about that's occurred over the last 36, 48 months?
You know, I think it's really important that our policymakers, you know, take a look at this report. They have to come to some evaluation of, you know, what's going on, right? If we are reducing the total number of that accountability, holding somebody accountable, we've reduced the juvenile bed space in the state of Colorado dramatically. We've taken away many of the holding facilities that could address the types of crimes that young people are involved in and where a young person could be held. We've taken bed space away year after year here in Colorado and reduced the number of people that Colorado holds that happen to be under the age of 18, yet we see this significant increase in violent crime. That tells a story right by itself. The other aspect of this is the budgets that we're using. We're actually spending more money per young person, per youthful offender, a lot more money. And, you know, based on the data, we're getting worse results, right? If we're spending more money to try to help young people not to offend, but yet the violent crime is going up and we're not having the success that we thought we would with spending these types of resources in order to prevent the future crimes, we have to reevaluate what's working and what's not working. And if we do this from this economic lens of the total cost of crime with young people, how that impacts the industries and the residents here in Colorado, and the amount of money we spend per youthful offender, it tells a very bleak story. We need to reassess. We need to reevaluate. We need to take a look at what actually works and what isn't working. And right now, it's hard to say we're spending more money on young people and getting the types of results of increase in violent crime committed by young people. That's not a good combination. We need to do something differently.
I guess I've seen the police department, particularly the last half decade, get subject to an accountability that, at least in my previous lifetime, I had not seen. But yet, I'm listening to you, and I heard you say accountability with regards to the younger people, and that has resulted, you thought, in a decrease that was coming about the last 36 months. But yet, I don't hear you saying an accountability for the system, particularly the people who are, in effect, once these kids are arrested or they're charged, that they're handed over to people and a system's in place. Is there an accountability there that we should be aware of, the folks listening to this podcast, that we should be maybe trying to ask about?
Earl, I'm so glad that you asked that question and framed it the way that you have. first and foremost, we should prioritize the victims of violent crime. These are families, these are human beings, these are people that are harmed as a result of this criminal behavior, whether it's the aggravated assaults, the robberies, the sex assaults, or the murder. It has a profound impact on the victims. Unfortunately, we're out of balance. We used to prioritize victims, and now we are prioritizing the youthful offenders, and we're making excuses for youthful offenders, and that is not accountability. We need to rebalance this effort. We need to reverse the trends of trying to help young people but still keep accountability in place, and we're not seeing that. When we talked about this reduction in bed space, what it has done, the net effect of it, if you're saying you have a total of 36 holding cells available in a particular jurisdiction, and you arrest an individual for a shooting, a stabbing, a robbery, a murder, and they're already at 36 beds, well, you have to push out somebody that was already involved in violent crime. So you're pushing out individuals involved in very violent crimes without support systems because new crimes are happening. This effort to just reduce jail spaces for young people has had an impact. It totally erodes any level of accountability. If you are placed on a hold and somebody commits a crime worse than yours, then it's likely you're going to get released, and you're released not because of the conditions of a bond, not because you have adequate supervision. You're being released because they don't have enough bed space, because they don't have enough holding cells. And how does that fit into accountability?
Okay. We've got a legislative session in place right now. You're in full swing. Is anything happening down at the Capitol that's taking into account some of what we're talking about here in any measures that might help with regards to the criminal activity, but also maybe deterring criminal activity of juveniles?
There are a couple of legislators who have introduced some bills that increase accountability. Looking at who the bill sponsors are and then some of the lack of support that they have, it is likely that the bills that increase accountability for criminal behavior, whether that's juveniles that are engaged in the criminal behavior or adults, it does not appear likely that those bills are going to progress. We continue to see erosion of accountability. There's a bill that I'm concerned about that looks at recidivism, and it's redefining what recidivism means. Recidivism, if you pull it up in the dictionary or you ask your Google assistant to define what recidivism is, it's very clear. Somebody convicted of a crime that goes on and reoffends. We don't need to redefine what recidivism is. We need to reduce recidivism. And Colorado has the fourth highest recidivism rate in the country. So meaning when we do hold somebody accountable and then they're released from prison, there's a 50% failure rate. There's a 50% likelihood that individual is going to go on and reoffend. Fourth worst. There's only three states that do it worse than us. Instead of redefining the term recidivism, what we should do is go to Virginia, who's got a 23% recidivism rate. We should take a look at Utah or Wyoming, who have a 28% recidivism rate. Florida, Ohio have much better rates. We should look at what they're doing and attempt to replicate the success that they are having on preventing people from reoffending. Instead, we want to change what recidivism, we're going to commit, we're planning on doing a study that changes what the term recidivism means, that does not appear to be anything akin to holding people accountable for their crimes. And we've already gone down some of these paths. We used to have individuals that were convicted of crime by a jury of their peers, and they were required to do 5 years of parole. In the Colorado State Legislature has changed that to 3 years in an attempt to address recidivism. Changing the terms doesn't fix the issue, and we need to fix the issue. We often hear about root causes. The root cause of crime is criminal behavior. We need to address criminal behavior.
You know, I've always featured Colorado to be one of the more enlightened states in the country with its population of, I believe, on a per capita basis, we have the most highly educated or second most highly educated populace in the United States. And for us to fall into this quagmire of definition and criminal activity that's going on and how we're handling it is kind of disappointing. I would think that we would be far more capable at handling the issue than we are. But you know what? That's another podcast. Chief, thank you so much for your time and all you've done for the, you know, for the city of Denver and the state of Colorado, and for being a fellow at CSI and just bringing the issue to us so there's a candor with which we can look at it and say, hey, wait a minute, I just can't ignore this. This is something that we've all got to be aware of and try to do something with our various representatives. Chief, thank you so much.
Earl, thank you so much. It's always great to see you. Great questions. Thank you for having me on the show. I really appreciate talking to you.
Thank you for listening to the Common Sense Digest. For more on today's topic, as well as our research on the most pressing public policy issues facing Colorado, please visit commonsenseinstituteco.org. The preceding episode, along with all others, is available on podcatchers everywhere or on our website under the podcast tab. Our technical producer is John Ekstrom and Deft Communications. This has been a production of the Common Sense Institute.